sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
I think we're live. I hope.
Are we live? We not live? We're live.
So James Ham's there. I'm Kyle Madsen. So no Joe Brazil today. Joe is dealing with, that's crazy. Joe gets the opportunity to work an event with promotions today, which is part of his responsibilities here at Odyssey Sacramento. So I'm running the board again for our show, and I forgot how to do everything, it turns out.
Uh-oh.
So we're starting a little late. A little technical hiccup to start the program, but that's fine, because at least we're not the Memphis Grizzlies, who are firing their head coach 2 weeks before the playoffs start.
Uh-oh.
The number 5 seed Memphis Grizzlies.
Absolutely crazy.
Did not, and this did not get reported by Shams. Woj didn't come out of retirement to report it. Not Mark Stein, not Chris Haynes, nobody reported it. The Grizzlies PR staff tweeted it out. And they said, hey, we thank Taylor Jenkins for his contributions. We're moving on.
This Wild. Is the craziest thing. Like, this late in the season, like, what are you doing? I guess we're not live in the stream, like, audio-wise. So hopefully we figured that out.
We got it. We're good.
We're good. All right, we're back. Look, Taylor Jenkins, things went sideways last year. And I would not have been surprised if he was let go last season, because it wasn't just like injury after injury after injury, but they also, like, they just didn't play well. And the year before, they had all the drama with Jaw and just chaos and like all the outside, like working its way into the inside. But to do it now with 8 or 9 games left in the season and you're in a playoff chase, the story here is much bigger than what it is today, and it just doesn't make any sense.
So you initially, right, go to, like, the Ime Udoka thing in Boston.
Yes.
And we'll get to the Kings got a really nice win over the Blazers last night. We're going to talk about that for sure. But you immediately go to the Ime Udoka situation in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, man, what happened that they would fire a coach who's been pretty successful? He's gone to the playoffs 3 times. I think they only have 1 playoff series win. But last year, things got derailed because of the John Morant stuff, and they had some injuries. But this year, they're the 5 seed right now in the West. I think they're 1.5 games out of the 3 seed. So I'm going, man, there has to be something massive going on here. And maybe there is more to it. But then I saw ESPN 92.9, our sister station out in Memphis, quote tweeted the Grizzlies PR tweet, and said, Jenkins out with the deuces emoji.
Like, what?
It's like, we had a harsher reaction to Mike Brown being fired, and the Kings were 5 games under. That's their response? So I hit their PD, and I said, hey, bro, what's the deal here? Are we missing something? And he's like, yeah, they haven't beat a good team, or they can't beat a good team. We don't need a playoff series loss to tell us what we know about Taylor Jenkins as a coach.
Mm.
And that's really interesting to me, because they've let this play out this long. And so I wonder, so they just lost last night to Oklahoma City, 125-104. They just got smoked. And I'm wondering if the Grizzlies front office is looking at this. They've played. I actually went and, oh, nope, I didn't. I took it down. What a dummy. But they've gotten beat all 4 times they played OKC this year, and they got smoked in all 4 of those games. I think 13 was their largest or their smallest margin of defeat.
Hmm.
And so I wonder if the Grizzlies front office goes, hey, there's a trajectory here that we want to be on. And the fact we're not competitive with the best team in the West means we're not on that trajectory. So we're just moving on.
Yeah, but that's like, I mean, that's like pulling the ripcord when you're still in the plane. like what kind of insanity is that? Like, I mean, they can spin this any way they want, but you have 9 games left in the season. Like, and this team is 44-29.
Yeah.
They're 15 games over 500.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
They're going to win something very close to or a little over 50 games.
Yeah, I mean, what does this actually do for your team? Does it put you in a better position for draft picks? No. Like, what are you doing right now? Why not just ride it out till the end of the season? And like, look, we're not in their building, so no. We don't know what Taylor Jenkins is like behind the scenes. But like, this has been a coach that developed a culture of winning in Memphis. He is a leader of men. It is watching them play is something that teams like the Kings should aspire to do. This is a team that plays every single second of every game. And I'm just really confused how you go from like winning 53.9% of your games, a 539 win percentage over 6 years, to out the door with 9 games left in a season. So something had to happen. And there's no way that they're going to, like, this is not a normal thing that ever happens in the league where a coach just gets fired out of nowhere. The only other coach I remember something like this happening with is Kenny Atkinson, where he had his team winning. I guess maybe who was the Cavs coach? Dave Blatt?
David Blatt, yeah.
David Blatt, where they were like, he was literally the all-star game coach.
Yes. He and LeBron just didn't get along, and they said, see ya.
Yeah, I mean, he was supposed to be the all-star game head coach and got fired right before the all-star game.
That's where I think you're absolutely right. There has to be more going on here. Like, he and Ja Morant just don't get along, or he and the front office just don't see eye to eye on certain things, whatever it is. But because like you said, what is this? Even if the front office last night is watching them get mollywopped by the Thunder again to lose for the fourth time in 5 games, even if they're sitting there going, hey, you know what? We've maxed out with Taylor Jenkins. We've gotten as far as we can get with Taylor Jenkins.
Mm-hmm.
Like with the Warriors, with Mark Jackson, they went, this guy's taken us as far as we can go. Even if that's where you think this is going, you need another coach to get you over the hump. Why are you letting him go now?
Yeah.
Because the interim guy, unless they think the interim guy is the guy and gives them a better chance to win this year, then okay. Do we even know who the interim coach is yet?
No. No, I haven't heard any mention of who that coach is. They were just here. I don't, you know, again, like, I haven't gone through their coaching staff and really, like, you know, like, who could it be? Mm-hmm. But let me see. Who is her coaching staff? Joe Boylan.
Sure.
Noah LaRoche.
Yeah.
Patrick Mutombo.
Uh-huh.
I sat by Patrick Mutombo like maybe 12 years ago, courtside.
Did he seem like head coach material?
He seemed like a very nice guy. He does not seem like head coaching material, okay. But maybe that's changed.
I'm taking that off the board then.
Jason March is there, former Sacramento Kings assistant coach. Anthony Carter is there. Mm-hmm. Of course, the father of Kings,
Devin Carter.
Mm-hmm. But Eric Schmidt, I don't know who that is. And so I don't know who's taking over this team. I just think it's a very, very strange situation that rarely do you see a team who's careening towards a middle of the playoff team looking more and more like either a 4 or 5 seed, possibly a 3 seed, just bounce their coach with 9 games left in the season. So again, this is like a major red flag. Something's happened here. Mm-hmm. that we will eventually find out about. For today, it's just a really odd moment.
Really strange, dude. Man. We'll see if that impacts the playoff race at all.
Yeah.
The Grizzlies currently the 5 seed. Just a strange decision. But like I said, person I talked to in Memphis is like, yep, totally expected this.
They're 8-11 since the All-Star break. I don't understand it.
Yeah, they were 35-16, and now they're 44-29.
Mm.
They're 9-13 over the last 22. But just let them play out the string.
Yeah,
start working on it next year.
I mean, that's where you're at. I mean, that usually you just clean house right after the season.
Man,
what a weird day.
Getting a jump start on it.
Yeah.
Not a weird start for the Kings last night. They beat the... Well, a little bit of a weird start, actually. I take that back.
A very strange start.
128-107, the final. You guys, people covering the game, You get a sheet of paper with the starting lineups on it.
Okay, so...
And please explain how this all went down.
Yeah, so we're typically, we get a... Not only do they print it out and they bring it to, like, our media seats. I'm not usually at my media seat until maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes before the game. So I don't usually wait for the piece of paper. We have a media Twitter account that they send out to only media members, right? So we get starting lineups, a sheet, but a virtual sheet through Twitter every game. Now, for whatever reason, they didn't give us that sheet last game. And
last night?
No.
Last
the
night?
Previous game, we didn't get the sheet. So last night, sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting, because I just basically copy-paste, put starters, and tweet it out. It's what I do every game.
Yep.
Right?
Part of the routine.
It is. And so I'm waiting, and I'm looking around like, hey, why aren't we getting the starter sheet? So all of a sudden, it usually comes out at 6:30, because that's when the lineups have to be in through the league. They have to be in at 6:30. So 6:31, 6:32, they send this thing out via Twitter to us on a private account, right? On a locked account, right? So we're sitting there, we're waiting. We finally, at like 6:58, we get the sheet sent to us.
2 minutes before the game.
2 minutes before the game. Well, the game usually starts around 7. It's supposed to start at 7, but really, games start at like 7:05 or 7:07, whatever.
2 minutes before scheduled tip.
Yeah, exactly. So, all of a sudden, we look at the sheet, and the starting lineup is Malik Monk, Zach LaVine, Keegan Murray, DeMar DeRozan, and Domantas Sabonis. Book it. Ready to go.
Yep.
You know, Malik Monk is back. The Scott Moak announces the starters.
You're starting five.
You're starting five, Sacramento Kings. Announces Malik Monk, but instead of Malik Monk coming out and giving high fives and doing jumping up and all that, it's Keon Ellis. Then we go to start the game, and Keon Ellis is, you know, getting ready, taking off the, you know, the warm-ups and like... Like walking out with the starters, and we're like, okay, what is going on here? You look at, and so your first instinct is, oh, well, maybe Monk got sick again.
Right.
First thing you do, you look down on the bench, there's Malik Monk. Like, okay, Monk's on the bench, Keon's in the game. Anyway, the opening tip happens, and Keon Ellis is starting, and not Malik Monk. And I don't know if this is a, I'm pretty sure it's a league violation. I'm not sure exactly what this is. I'm sure the league is going to like have something to say about it. I'm sure the Blazers weren't too happy about it. And I don't know if this was gamesmanship or what, but when I asked Doug Christie about it in postgame, he said, oh yeah, this was the plan to start Keon. It's like, then who messed up? Because somewhere along the way, somebody messed up, because that's not the way it goes.
So do you think they put out the starting lineup with Malik on purpose?
I don't know. I mean,
isn't this the second time they've had some issue with their starting lineup this year?
Yes. That the other time they said that was, they tried to blame it on a PR staff or something. Like the last time it happened was they said, oh, it was a typo. And that was a weird one. This here, I have no idea what to say.
If it's actually gamesmanship, if that's what they were going for here. Because you're not going to play that card a lot of times. Because you're right. They're probably going to catch some kind of fine for that.
Yeah.
If you're pulling that card against the Blazers, that's tough. Doing the gamesmanship thing against that version of the Blazers is... I don't know if that the ROI is good there.
Yeah, I'm just confused by the entire situation, and we did not get clear. I mean, I literally asked Doug about it in postgame. I followed it up with, is this a one-off, or is this something that we're doing moving forward? Is something the Kings are doing, Doug is doing moving forward? And he was very specific, and, well, actually, he didn't really answer the question, except for to say that Monk is a player that is willing to do whatever it takes for this team to win. And that he's been a great sixth man, and that Keon's been very, very good in the starting lineup. And he really likes having two defenders in Keegan Murray and Keon Ellis starting. It's something that we've said the entire season. It's something that we said coming into the season that Keon Ellis probably should start. And if Doug has somehow worked this up where he can rewind what Mike Brown did and putting Malik Monk into the starting lineup, it's a pretty big deal.
I'm going to victory lap next. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Oh, we're hanging out with you until noon. Plenty of Kings Blazers coming up for you. We got some other NBA stuff, including maybe the best ending to an NBA game that you'll see this season. We'll get to that. We had some baseball yesterday with opening day. And at 11 o'clock, Oakland Athletics, Sacramento Athletics first baseman Tyler Soderstrom, who hit two homers last night, he's going to join us at 11 o'clock. All that coming up. James Hamm's there. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. It's ESPN 1320, and this is Sacramento Sports Leader.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Yeah, sure as heck is. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. The Kings beat the Blazers 128-107 last night. And I got to tell you, it was as good as the Kings have looked in a month? A few weeks?
They did have the big win over Cleveland.
Yeah, that was just a couple weeks ago. Last week? Couple weeks ago?
Yeah, but I still Time feel like matter. Just watching them play, this was the most connected I've seen the team. And
it was almost frustrating.
Because they don't do it all the time?
Yeah, like where has this been?
Yeah.
That looked like that looked like what we've been talking about when we say, well, if X, Y, and Z happen, then yeah, this can all work. Like, DeMar DeRozan, just the primary facilitator? Sure. Zach LaVine, your go-to 1A scorer? Yep. Things running through Domantas Sabonis? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
High intensity on defense for 48 minutes? Wow.
It was really, really strange to watch it play out. And even the stats don't back up what we saw. So, the Kings, first of all, they shot 64.9% from the field.
Ridiculous.
65% from the field.
Ridiculous.
Like, the most ridiculous thing I've seen for, you know, like, I don't remember another game where the Kings shot 65%. Maybe there has been a couple of games in the entire time I've covered this team, but not that many.
I'm committed to finding this out right now. I am neck deep in Stathead.
Okay, cool. Go ahead. So, here's the crazy thing. You shoot 65% from the field, which means that your offense is just rolling. And not only did they shoot, they only shot 10 of 27 from three. So it wasn't a whole bunch of three-point shots. They have 74 shot attempts in this game. That's it, which is wild. They had 14 less shot attempts than the Memphis Grizzlies. I mean, than the Portland Trailblazers. But the key thing here, Kyle, they only had 24 assists. If you're going to shoot 65%, and the way we watched the ball hop all over the court, It was so spectacular. The extra pass, mm-hmm. Everything was beautiful. Somehow you only end up with 24 assists. I don't, like, again, the mathematics don't work out to me.
Yeah, it didn't look that way for sure. If you'd said how many assists did the Kings have last night, it'd have been like 40.
38? Yeah.
Three other times in Kings history have they shot 64.9% or better. The last time it happened, March 20th of 2001.
Okay, yeah, so.
And the other two times were in Kansas City.
Yeah, so yeah, I've covered the team for 15 years. It's never happened during my time.
Yeah, shooting 65% in an NBA game is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I remember them shooting over 60, but There's a big difference between 60 and 65%.
Yeah, absolutely. Man. Yeah, man, it was a really nice reminder, and it's why as down as we've been on the Kings at times. And this is still, like, don't get it twisted. One win does not mean, oh my God, hey, could this team make a run? No, I don't think that's in the cards this year. But when you start trying to talk yourself into, all right, can you win a couple of play-in games? Can you make a first-round series kind of interesting? It's like, that version of the Kings? Yeah, sure. Whether we get that version of the Kings 8 nights out of 10 is still TBD.
Yeah.
But the fact it's there is encouraging. The fact that they went into a game that they needed to get and played that way was encouraging. The fact that after so much was put on the Zach LaVine not shooting, what's wrong with Zach LaVine, Can he and DeMar DeRozan coexist? The fact that they go out and play a game where those two players coexist very nicely.
Seamlessly. Yeah.
That at least makes them interesting here over the next couple of weeks. I don't take back anything I said about wholesale changes that need to happen in the front office. Mm-hmm. I still don't think that this is some version of their roster that's going to work. Every question I had about the Kings remains. But seeing them put together that performance last night in that spot was, if you're talking about culture building, if you're talking about their chances to at least be interesting over the next couple of weeks, you feel really, really good about that.
Yeah, it was super refreshing. And just going through, like, one, if you look at the box score, first and foremost, the Kings destroyed them points in the paint, 60-32. They destroyed the Blazers on the glass, 46-32. We did talk about it yesterday that the Blazers are a really good offensive rebounding team. And they did out rebound the Kings on the offensive glass 15-9, but the Kings had 37 defensive rebounds. Like,
that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, they dominated. They had more defensive rebounds than the Blazers had total rebounds.
That was Jesus. That's wild. It was really clear. Like, boxing out is one of those little things. It doesn't show up in the box score. You're not going to typically. It was noticeable what the Kings were doing on the defensive glass last night.
Mm-hmm.
DeMar DeRozan mixing it up. Keegan Murray getting bodies on bodies. Domantas Sabonis being a force of nature. It was really clear that they saw the numbers we saw. We went in going, this is a team that plays hard. They're athletic. They all jump out of the gym. You have to play a fundamentally sound game, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to put a beat down on that Portland team, they did everything they kind of needed to do to do that.
Yeah, the only thing they didn't do is they turned the ball over 20 times, and it was pretty distributed except for Domas having six.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember Domas having six turnovers. Like, I don't know how, again, I'm not sure how they had 20 turnovers and 24 assists. You know, again, this team, they only shot 74 shots last night and scored 128 points.
That's crazy.
It is wild. And if you look at the shot distribution, this is where I think that the Kings really, really may have stumbled onto something.
Mm-hmm.
You got DeMar DeRozan at 10 field goal attempts. You got Keegan Murray at 11, Domantas Sabonis at 11, Zach LaVine at 18. You've got Keon Ellis at 7, and you got Malik Monk at 9 off the bench. Now, if you could take, like, almost every other game this season is probably around 85, 86 mm-hmm. field goal attempts, and you just redistribute those, you know, you give DeMar DeRozan 2 more, you give Keegan Murray 2 more, you give Sabonis 2 more, 18 for LaVine is fine, but 2 more to Ellis and 2 more to Malik Monk. The shot distributions is almost perfect for this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, again, watching, it wasn't just that DeMar DeRozan only took 10 shots, because he went 9 of 11 from the free throw line, which means he had one, and he had five other shots. He had five other shot attempts. Mm-hmm. So realistically, his shot attempts should look more like 15 than it does, sure, you know, 10. But I just thought, like, they looked like a team, and they were so, yes, connected, and we just have not seen that at all. It has looked like a collection of dudes on a court.
Yes.
Some of which are playing at breakneck speed, some of which are not playing hard at all. Some that are fully engaged and some that aren't, you know, lots of standing around and watching. And then all of a sudden the ball's moving, the players are moving, everything looks right in the world. And it's for one night against a very marginal team at this point.
Sure.
But still a team that has won quite a few games and looked really good over the last maybe month and a half. Good win.
Yeah. Really, really, really nice win. I have a fun statistic for you. We mentioned the 64.9% from the field and how many times that's happened in Kings history. 128 points on 74 or fewer field goal attempts. That has only happened now 27 times in NBA history.
Wow.
And the Kings did it last night. The Kings have done it three times as an organization. Do you know when the last time they did it was?
Nope.
April 21st of 2021. Allow me to tell you who the starting lineup was for the Kings.
April 21st, 2021. Okay, that's pandemic?
No. That's year after pandemic.
But it's still the 72-game season?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, this is, all right, De'Aaron Fox,
mm-hmm.
Buddy Hield, Harrison Barnes, Mo Harkless, and Hassan Whiteside.
Oh my gosh.
That was the starting five the last time the Kings did a thing that's only happened 27 times in NBA history.
That's crazy.
Dog, what?
Well, it makes sense that they only shot that many times because Mo Harkless was in the starting lineup.
He went 3 of 4 from the field, 1 of 1 from beyond the arc.
Yeah.
Buddy Hield, 7 of 11 from 3, 11 of 16 from the field for Buddy in that game. Cooking. 29 points. De'Aaron had 30. De'Aaron went to the free throw line
just back
14
it up.
Times.
Read me that stat line again.
Buddy's?
Yeah.
11 of 16 from the field.
Okay.
7 of 11 from 3.
Okay. 29 points.
29 points, 6 boards, 5 assists.
It just really sounded very similar to what Zach LaVine did last night.
What was LaVine's? 13 of 18?
Yeah, he was 13 of 18, 2 of 5 from 3, and he had 29 points.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, there is a way that this team to distribute the shot attempts like this, to have it be, like, again, I have no problems at all with Zach LaVine taking 18 shots. He should take 18 shots every game, but to have him go 13 of 18, I know he was asked in postgame if he should have shot more threes. He's like, bro, we shot like 65% from the field and won by 20. No,
yeah, that's,
I'm perfectly fine with my shot attempts.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, if you know, because we've been talking about the Kings need to shoot more threes, they need to shoot more threes. What'd they get up last night, 27? Yeah, they only got up 27. But if you're going to the rack and you're scoring at the rate you were scoring, would they have 60 points in the paint last night?
Yeah, 60.
If you're scoring 60 in the paint, then yeah, maybe you don't need to put up as many threes. Yeah, I think those in a game like last night, I'm far less concerned about. Didn't get enough threes up.
Yeah.
You're not going to score 60 in the paint every night, and you're going to have to get more threes up, if you want to win play-in games and be competitive in the postseason. But, they found something we talked yesterday, like exploiting mismatches. They found something that was working and they just kept hammering it.
Yeah, I mean, like, to perfection. And I think long term, like, you looked at the Blazers, all of a sudden looked again like that super young team that they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't have Jeremy Grant. They didn't have DeAndre Ayton. They didn't have some of their veteran players. But overall, they had enough juice. They had enough players to actually compete,
mm-hmm.
at least the way that they have since the All-Star break.
Yeah.
And you were just able to put a stamp on it. You know, the Kings on the season averaged 90.2 field goal attempts per game.
Man,
that's a lot of field goal attempts that were left on the table last night, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Like, again, like, the Kings just played extremely well, and everybody played well, and everybody shared the ball, and there was always an extra pass.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just like the most eye-catching thing. It's like, oh, that's a good shot. Nope, that's a better shot. Oh, hit it.
It was also, you mentioned the turnovers. I think a lot of those were from overpassing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's going to happen sometimes, but I thought last night was about as encouraged as I've been in. I mean, the win over the Cavs was really nice, but just the fact that they didn't let Portland hang around. Portland didn't win a quarter. You win the first quarter by 9. You're up 18 at the end of the first half, and then there was no letting off the gas. And that was, if you're looking for tangible progress, like, that's something that we just watched them against Chicago, and Chicago's been playing better lately, but mm-hmm. we watched them blow a 19-point lead against Chicago. And so for them to come out and turn an 18-point halftime lead into a 21-point win, like, great. I'm looking for improvements from Doug Christie and the coaching staff. I'm looking for improvements from Keegan Murray and Keon Ellis and you know, individuals. I don't know, man. They beat the hell out of the Blazers.
They did. They did. And I think it's interesting, the Keegan Murray thing, goes 7-11 from the field, 2-6 from 3. since his brother got into the league, he has played so poorly against Portland. Every time he plays against Portland, whether his brother's on the court or not, he has been absolutely atrocious. So this season against Portland, he came in shooting, well, I think this is after last night's, yeah, it is after last night's game.
Okay.
On the season, he's shooting 38.5% and 26.3% from three against Portland. And that's after last night's 7 of 11 performance. The year before, I believe, was even worse.
Yikes.
Chris's rookie season against Portland, I mean, against Keegan. Keegan shot 25% from the field and 20% from three, and that's in three starts.
Yikes,
he played 94
minutes.
That's
so weird.
Yeah, he just really struggled when his... And I know it's more than just his brother, because his parents fly in for those games, so... you know, Kenyon Murray was there last night, and he was there for the to watch them. Yep. I don't. Maybe that's part of it. Just like the overall, like everyone's there, and he's distracted a little bit. But that is not the player we saw last night. He came out in the first quarter, was so aggressive and so dominant. Then he went dormant for like 2.5 quarters,
as he is wont to do.
Exactly, and then he pops back up in the fourth quarter and like boom, finishes the game off. You're like, ah, that right there was a quality performance by Keegan Murray.
The flashes of aggressiveness seem to be coming more frequently.
Yes.
Where it's not one quarter every few games, it's a couple times a game, there's a stretch where Keegan Murray just kind of owns that stretch of game. And if we're taking things away from the end of this year, whatever it turns out to be, if we're taking things away from the end of this year, that's the thing I'm watching closest. Because Keegan Murray, since March 1, that's 15 games, is averaging 14.6 boards, 1.5 assists on 47.1% from the field and 40% from three.
Mm.
In his last eight games, he scored double figures in each game. It's his longest stretch of games this year, scoring double figures. 15.5 points, 7.1 boards, 1.5 assists, 49.5% from the field, 44.1% from three. And like I said, and then there's just the visual. There's the eye test of when you're watching a Kings game, there's going to be a stretch at some point where Keegan Murray grabs a big rebound, hits a couple of threes, gets to the rack, throws down a dunk, and you go, oh, there's Keegan. Is it as consistently as we might like? No, probably not. Mm-hmm. Like you said, he was really good in the first and then didn't show up again until what, like late third quarter?
Yeah, late sometime third or fourth. Early fourth. Yeah.
Late in the game, it's, oh, hey, there. Look, Keegan's back.
He didn't take a shot in the third quarter.
Okay. So
in 7 minutes.
Okay.
And I believe he took in the second quarter, he took one shot in the second quarter. He went 5 of 6 in the first, 4 or 5 in the first quarter, I believe, and then 4 of 6 for the half.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't take another shot until the fourth quarter. And then the fourth quarter, he wakes up and you're like, hey, there he is again.
Right. You know?
So he goes 3 of 5, hits a three, scores 8 points in the fourth.
Yeah. We'll keep diving into the Keegan Murray stuff. We had maybe the best ending to an NBA game all season last night.
Mm.
I would like to go over that with you next. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320. It is Sacramento Sports Leader.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Tough season opener for the A's last night.
Yeah.
A 4-2 to the Seattle Mariners. In about 15 minutes, A's first baseman Tyler Soderstrom, who hit 2 home runs last night, puts him on pace for 324 homers.
Something like that. Yeah. Quick math.
See if he can get there. It would be a record.
It would. He would be the all-time leading home run individual season home run record king.
I don't know if you caught the end of this Bulls-Lakers game, but the Bulls were down 18 in the fourth quarter.
Oh.
And we're going to pick up the action here. This is courtesy of CHSN, and it's Adam Amin with Stacey King on the call. I need you specifically to listen for Stacey King during this call. But again, the Bulls have erased an 18-point deficit. They lead 116 to 115 with 6.1 seconds left. And that's where we will pick up the action.
Sirs, Doncic took the final shot before that. Here's Reeves. Reeves straight to the cup. Lays it in to take the lead. Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win.
Go! Oh, my God. I cannot believe this. Elizabeth, I'm coming, baby.
Watch this guy. Watch this guy. This is great right here.
Magic Giddy. Good day, mate. Somewhere in Australia, Sydney or Melbourne. Paul Hogan is somewhere here. Crocodile Dundee. Oh, Lord.
Sirs,
Stacey King just losing his mind.
Stacey King completely lost his mind.
It's incredible. Josh Giddy. He got a 40-footer for the win. That was amazing.
I thought Stacey King would be a Sacramento King back in the 1989 NBA draft.
Oh.
The Kings had the first overall pick, and there was no consensus number one overall pick.
Oh, the worst.
And it was between guys like Stacey King and Purvis Ellison. The Kings didn't even visit Purvis Ellison. They just drafted him with sight unseen.
Perfect.
And when they got him in the building, realized that he really didn't much care to play basketball. He just happened to be a tall guy who was talented, and that wasn't really his jam. But yeah, interesting stuff.
It's so funny because you see this a lot, like during the NFL draft process. And I imagine it's the same in the NBA. Like so much of the draft process, we as a media just and fan group.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're looking at film. We're looking at athletic scores. We're looking at all these different kind of things. When in reality, like, the gap between most of the prospects is not, like, there's tiers, and there's definitely, like, the number one, like, Abdul Carter, the consensus top defensive end, and the worst defensive end, like, there's a pretty steep gap there. But, like, for the most part, the gap between the players is not, from a talent perspective, is not that wide.
Yeah.
It's just what you said. It's like, does this guy want to play? Or was this person just a freak athlete who was able to get some NIL money or get school paid for because they were awesome at this sport, but they want to go do something else with their life? They want to be a doctor, or they want to be in television, or whatever it is. And I think so much of the draft process for the teams is less about the film and the athletics course and more trying to talk to the guys and figure out, like, hey, do you like playing this sport or not? Do you want to do this for a living or no?
Well, I think that's when you hear these weird stories about people asking, like, strange interview questions and everything else.
Mm.
It's difficult to really, as somebody who's sitting across from somebody, mm-hmm. to look into the soul of a player and say, do they have that certain something that elevates them above everything mm-hmm. else? Like, again, I think we all believe that Keegan Murray is going to be an excellent NBA basketball player for, you know, 12, 15 mm-hmm. years in the league, right? Like, he is a very, very good basketball player. You don't know about the mental aspect of the game, and can he take this gigantic step to not just be more, you know, more consistent, but also, like, more selfish and these other things that are sometimes it's just outside of who they are.
Sure.
And also sometimes, like to compare Keegan to somebody like Cam Johnson, like, it's taking Cam Johnson until he's like 29 to actually be the player everyone thought he would be at 23.
Right.
And so now you get this player, you're like, hey, look at that. He's averaging 19 points a game. Where'd that come from?
Yeah.
It's like, well, it was always there. Number one, the opportunity might not have been there, but also opportunity in this situation, it's same with Keegan. Opportunity to start, that's one thing. Opportunity to play 30 minutes a game, but opportunity to say, I'm the guy who's going to take 15 shots tonight. Sometimes a player doesn't have that in him to be forceful in one way.
Unless it's spoon-fed to them.
Yeah. Yeah, and at some point in their career, they become more confident as a person and more, like, secure in who they are on the court and everything else, and they can take another logical step.
That's one of the peripheral reasons why I've been, and I think so many others, have been on the start Keon Ellis train, because that opens shots for Keegan Murray.
Yeah.
This player that is part of their core going forward, at least presumably. And when he's when Malik Monk and Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan are trying to figure out amongst themselves who's orchestrating this, who's taking the shots, what are we doing here? And you've got Keegan Murray just hanging out. Like, that's why, and I don't think it's a coincidence when Keon Ellis starts that, oh, hey, look, we've seen a more aggressive Keegan Murray lately.
Yeah,
Malik Monk's been out, and Keegan, super aggressive. Malik Monk coming off the bench. Wow, look, Keegan Murray, super aggressive in the first quarter. Weird.
It's really difficult for a young player to look around the court and go, okay, Malik Monk is one of the noisiest players. I mean, he's the noisiest player in Sacramento, but he might be the noisiest player that I've seen in Sacramento for a long time.
He does not ever stop talking.
Yeah, there's like Iman Shumpert was that way, but there haven't been a lot of like the noisy guys.
Mm-hmm.
And that for Keegan is an energy drain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but you look next to you and you got Domantas Sabonis. Domantas Sabonis is an all NBA player, and Keegan knows that. And then you look over and there's DeMar DeRozan. DeMar DeRozan's a Hall of Famer. You had De'Aaron Fox, who's your buddy, but also who's an all-star and who averages 26 a game.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you've got Zach LaVine. So I think it's really difficult for a young player to feel like he has the, I don't know, like it's his right to take 15 or 20 shots.
Yeah.
You're just not going to feel that way unless you come into the league with that kind of moxie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what separates the great scorers, is that they just walk in the league and say, no, I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who's on my team. Get out of the way.
Right.
And that's never going to be Keegan, but that doesn't mean that he can't average 20 a game as a guy that like takes on bigger and bigger roles every year.
Yeah.
And then it's on the team to make sure that the roster is built so he can be that player.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't been that way yet. And you hope that that he will be able to take that next logical step.
At some point, and I know that Cam Johnson has kind of, he's a direct argument against what I'm about to say, but I feel like for a lot of guys, at some point, you just kind of are who you are in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And with Keegan at 25 years old, you're running up really close to that. And that's why when we talk, you know, what does this look like going forward and beyond this year, I think you really have to take that into consideration. Is this going to be just strictly a 3-and-D guy? Or is this going to be a really good defender who's also going to score 20 points a night?
Mm-hmm.
Is this going to be one of your primary offensive players where he's creating for himself a little bit? Because we see that. Like, the problem with Keegan to me is not, I shouldn't say the problem, the problem with Keegan for me is not the skill set. It's not, hey, can he dribble? Like, yeah, he's not Allen Iverson, but he can put the ball on the deck and drive, especially, you know, attacking closeouts. We've seen how good he is down in the post, getting to his mid-range. Like, he can get to his spots.
Mm-hmm.
He can create for himself a little. The problem is not the skill set. The problem is that it's all right, hey, this is not going to be Anthony Edwards. This is not a person who's going to look Barack Obama in the face and go, nah, I'm nice as hell. Like, don't let them, I don't know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not going to be that. He's not, people go, he needs to just go take his shots. He's not going to. He's not. He's never going to be that person. Because that goes, that now we're talking off the court. Now we're getting away from what's he doing between the lines. Now we're getting into how is he, what's his personality, which is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And he's just never going to be that guy who's like, I don't care who's on my team. There's no amount of player development that's going to make him that person. And he's going to need to be spoon-fed these opportunities a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a point where he's going to get more and more and more confident as he goes on in his career, and where he's allowed to flourish a little bit more, depending on where he's at, depending on who's around him and all that stuff. But I also think that there needs to be like a major determination and a major understanding that there's a difference between being a top three scorer on a team and being a top three most important person on a team, most important player on a team.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's Domas, it's probably Malik, mm-hmm. and the next one is Keegan Murray. I don't think that they're, you know, we talk about it with the 49ers, like how valuable Trent Williams is. You know, like he might not be the best player on the team. He might be. But there's also, like, without a player like that, everything else falls apart. And that's who Keegan is for this team. And you just hope that he gets better and better and better at the comfortability point where he's okay becoming more and more to a team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he is getting there. I just think, you keep mixing things up for him, and that's not what's best. Yeah. For like an introverted person to keep switching everything and the players around you and everything else, he doesn't feel comfortable.
Sure.
And that's understandable.
All right. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We are the Insiders. We got plenty more Kings coming up. Really nice win over the Blazers last night. What does that mean for Sacramento? We'll look at the standings. But before we do that, we're going to talk a little baseball with A's first baseman Tyler Soderstrom. He hit two home runs for them last night in their loss to the Seattle Mariners. He's going to join us next before we get back into some Sacramento Kings. So that's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.